from the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, medical data Democrats don't want, and a look at biblical principles for political engagement. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and homeschool dad. You know, the government tracks many, many statistics, including things like who lives where, income in different regions, and medical information galore. But one thing that's supposed to be tracked that isn't is the number of abortions being done. Congressman Gary Palmer of Alabama and Congressman Ralph Norman of South Carolina have introduced a bill that would improve the reporting of abortion data. Joining Family Research Council President Tony Perkins to talk about that bill is one of the co-authors, Congressman Ralph Norman.
Congressman Norman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you so much, Tony. Appreciate what you're doing.
Now, the data that we have from the CDC is incomplete when it comes to abortion. And so when we're, you know, crafting policy, I would assume that it's pretty important that we have all the data, is it not?
You know, it is, Tony, and it's true in this case, particularly since, as you mentioned earlier, that the Born Alive bill, Ms. Pelosi will not bring to the floor. She will not allow a vote, and it's up to us to continue the fight. And this bill does just that. If with anything, a business or anything, you have data that you need. And with abortions, we need to know. Right now, it's voluntary. States can choose to send it in, or they could choose not to, or it could be incomplete. So what this bill does is pretty much mandates it by losing Medicaid dollars if the states do not send it in. Gary Palmer is a co-sponsor who represents the 6th District in Alabama. And we should have had this a long time ago. And it's just now this puts the onus on the states to turn it over. And they have to sign a certifiable form that they basically ask two questions, the number of abortions performed each year, and then secondly, the number of children that were born alive after a botched medical procedure.
Mm-hmm. You know, Congressman, I agree with you. I think that the time has come for this because the data that most rely upon when it comes to abortion comes from Planned Parenthood affiliates and from their research arm. And, you know, given how they operate, you know, trafficking and baby body parts and criminal activity, alleged criminal activity, I should say, for some reason, I don't think we should trust them when it comes to the reporting of abortion statistics.
Well, not only not trust them, they try to downplay this because this whole abortion issue, if you listen to the majority of the Democrats, it's not an issue that not that many children that are born alive after a botched abortion attempt, and they just, you can't trust them. And this puts it where they have to report it, and they lose funding if they do not report it, and report it accurately.
So this would work by the Medicaid dollars, I believe, that pertains to family planning. Is that correct? That those would be the dollars that would be withheld if they did not report. Now, if they were late in getting the report, but they got the information in, those dollars would be made back up. So there's no effort here to withhold funds, you know, arbitrarily. It is to simply get them to provide the data so that the policymakers can have an accurate picture of what's happening in the states.
That's exactly right. And there's no personal information involved. The questions don't involve who's having the abortion. It's just two simple questions about the number of abortions and the number of children who are born alive. And if a state is late in getting it to the CDC, then that's, again, we can retroactively refund the money. But, you know, you have states like California, Illinois, they just don't make any attempt. And it's just not right. And it's not right to downplay it like the Democrats have been doing for a long time.
Any estimate, Congressman Norman, as to the percentage of states that are fully reporting so that you get an idea of what percentage of the picture we're really getting?
I tried to get that number, and nobody seems to have it. it's just been no record on it because it hadn't been mandatory. And quite frankly, the ones that have sent it in, don't know that it's reliable. But mm-hmm. by having dollars taken from the state, then it's a real incentive to get it in. And, you know, family planning is another word that the left has hijacked into putting that into the abortion category. Family planning is just what it says, planning before a woman is pregnant. So, you know, it makes perfect sense. Every state should want to do this, but the left is blocking it.
Yeah, that's a really good point, and you're right. They lump family planning, or I should say they lump abortion in with family planning, and abortion is not family planning. And, you know, you need to have the data to see, all right, are these family planning dollars that are going through Medicaid, is it working? Or is it just fueling more abortions? You don't know unless you have the data. Congressman, I want to ask you to hold on. We're up against a break. We'll be back with more Washington Watch. I got some clips. I think you need to understand how radical this field of candidates, two dozen, how radical they are on abortion. This is not your grandpappy's Democratic Party. I mean, this is a party that is basically sold out to Planned Parenthood. We're going to talk about that when we come back with Congressman Ralph Norman. Don't go away. More Washington Watch to come right after this.
If you're like me, you care about the future of our country. Now more than ever, it is vital that we stand up for biblical values. This year, you can. Come to the annual Values Voter Summit in Washington, D.C. on October 11th through the 13th and join thousands of Americans like you who want to change the culture so that human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. This year, we're calling on Americans to pray, to vote, and to stand firm as we fight back to win the culture. Invited and confirmed speakers include Dana Lesh, Sebastian Gorka, Bill Bennett, Laura Ingraham, and Reverend Franklin Graham. Now is the time to stand for truth. There will be opportunities to meet with organizations and attendees that share a biblical worldview on issues like religious liberty, the LGBT movement, the sanctity of life, the realities of socialism, and more. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. In our first segment, FRC President Tony Perkins was talking with Congressman Ralph Norman, and we're going to continue that conversation. But before we do, here's Tony as he introduces a couple of clips from the Democrat debate that happened a few weeks ago.
NBC debate moderator Lester Holt asked Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren about her abortion views, and this is what she had to say.
Senator Warren, would you put limits on any limits on abortion?
I would make certain that every woman has access to the full range of reproductive health care services, and that includes birth control, it includes abortion, it includes everything for a woman.
Congressman, to your point, I mean, they lump it all together, do they not?
Well, they do, and listen to what she said. You know, she tried to sugarcoat it by saying, you know, all reproductive measures, birth control. You're talking about killing a baby, and that's what they do not want to face head on. And I will tell you, the next step is to repeal the Hyde Amendment, which was passed 42 years ago. And the next step, if the liberals, the Democrats, take over the White House, they will push federal funding for abortion. That's what we're fighting. And that's why we've got to win this argument, and we've got to keep the bills coming to keep it highlighted. And as I tell people, you know, I've had a lot of the other congressmen say, well, this is never coming to the floor. And here's what I tell them. If I never put a bill up, the odds on getting to the floor are zero. If we put it up, and not just mine, others like this that combat abortion, then I've got a chance. And so that's why it's so important.
Well, I think it's extremely important, even though just because you don't think you can pass something doesn't mean you shouldn't try to do what is right and have the discussion. Part of the process is educating. I bet the vast majority of Americans had no idea that the states are not required to report this information. I mean, we've got to report everything, you know, every case of, whooping cough or whatever it might be, it has to be reported to the CDC. They track everything. But yet, this one issue, there's a carve-out. And I bet most Americans didn't know that.
They don't, Tony, and that's why it's so important to get it out there. And by having the leverage of losing dollars through Medicaid gives them an incentive to do it. And it's it should have been in place a long time ago. But there again, it's the left that's trying to stop this. And I can't imagine not having these numbers to look at. And then I think for your listeners, every pastor in this country ought to be talking about this because, mm-hmm. you know, when you get to killing children, you've lost a society. And we've got to stop it, and we've got to shine the light on it. This bill does that.
Here's another clip, Congressman, from Bernie Sanders on his response to the abortion question.
Let me make a promise here. My litmus test is I will never nominate any justice to the Supreme Court unless that justice is 100% clear he or she will defend Roe v. Wade.
I mean, just hearing his voice is almost comical, but what he is advocating is not, and that is the message of the Democratic Party. I don't know about you, Congressman, but I believe abortion is going to be a major issue in the 2020 election. And I do not think there could be a clear contrast between the two major political parties on this issue than there is right now.
It really isn't. And Tony, look at the socialism issue. You know, as I was looking at the president meeting with North Korea, you know, the fact that we have so many socialists on the Democratic Party, how are they going to negotiate with a country that believes in doing what they do? And but you're right. The abortion issue is front and center stage. The socialism issue is front and center stage. The Supreme Court is front and center stage on who the next replacement would be. And that's why this election has got so much riding on it. And for the country's sake. And that's why we've got to win this fight.
And it is so front and center that every American, when they go into the polls, I'm saying this to my listeners and to those that I talk to around the country, they're going to be confronted with a decision. And all other issues aside, they're going to select between a party that is going beyond just abortion to embracing infanticide, the murder of babies, and a party that increasingly is advocating for the sanctity of human life. And I've made this point before on my program, but after the last election in the House of Representatives, to my knowledge, there is not a single pro-choice Republican. The contrast between the two parties could not be clearer.
You're exactly right. And we've got to speak out. We've got to make it even be more vocal about it, because if we don't, the left, they're just getting started. And I tell you, they're mad. The thing that I see in Congress, they're out of power as far as the executive branch, and they're mad about it. And that's why they want to, that's why the deal with Kavanaugh was about Roe v. Wade. And the next Supreme Court justice is crucial for us to seal up this court in the right way for a long time, for years to come.
Well, Congressman Norman, thank you for continuing the fight to uphold the sanctity of human life, and I appreciate you coming on today to talk about it.
My pleasure. Thanks for what you're doing.
You can find out more about Congressman Norman when you visit tonyperkins.com. While you're there, check out our new publication, which we'll be talking about next, Biblical Principles for Political Engagement. Don't go away. We'll be right back with more on the weekend edition of Washington Watch, right after this.
Today, military personnel are at greater risk than ever of suffering from a mental health condition. On average, 21 active and retired military members take their own lives every day. Richard Gleaston, a military and veteran advocate in the area of mental health, recently shared evidence that faith-based solutions can help stop this crisis. Here's what Richard had to say.
There's new science out that they watch people while they're praying or have a religious relationship. The frontal part of their brain, if I'm correct in remembering what they told me, it strengthens it. It reduces depression, reduces anxiety and stress while you're doing it. So not only did God give us prayer as a way to alleviate our spirit, it also alleviates our mind and our bodies. Our bodies react in a positive way to a faith-based relationship.
Visit frc.org/speakers to hear more.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. American Christians are, at the very least, divided over how they should engage the political process, especially with a president with well-known flaws in his past. Some say those flaws are reason enough for Christians to stay home or oppose him. But there's more to the political process than behavioral issues. Joining FRC President Tony Perkins to talk about engaging politics from a biblical perspective is David Claussen, Director of Christian Ethics and Biblical Worldview at Family Research Council.
David, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you for having me back on Washington Watch, Tony. It's good to be here.
Well, let's talk a little bit. There's been a number of pieces that we're starting to see pop back up. There was one recently I just saw. And it's the same, as I said, recycled arguments about why Christians, should sit out this election or they should pursue a third party candidate. But whatever they do, they should not vote for Donald Trump. And let me just say this before we get into this conversation. Washington Watch or the Family Research Council does not endorse candidates nor get involved directly in elections. We're talking about the decision making here of using biblical principles to guide our political or public engagement. So we're talking about principles here. So you could insert any name. All right. You can take any name. But in this case, we're using the specific names of Donald Trump. So with that, David, what are some of the arguments that we're seeing pop back up?
Well, you're right, Tony. And really, I think the word you just used is kind of these recycled arguments. And really, since 2016, I've listened carefully to this type of argument. The argument is essentially this, that Donald Trump's moral life makes him unfit for the presidency. Now, when they refer to his moral life, what they're referring to is his decades as a New York celebrity, or maybe more specifically, the inappropriate comments that were made on a hot mic back in 2005. Now, no Christian I know is condoning decisions Donald Trump made as a New York socialite in the 1980s or 1990s. No Christian I know is saying those 2005 comments are, morally neutral or morally praiseworthy. Of course not. Then candidate Trump himself even apologized for those comments and promised to learn and to grow. And as Christians, as Christians who've received forgiveness and experienced God's grace in our own lives, I think we should give him the benefit of the doubt that he's learned from that whole ordeal. And we should also be grateful that there's been no scandal or of personal morality since President Trump took office. And it does appear the Trump family, including the First Lady, have set a positive example for families during their time in the White House. But the broader point is this.
Hey, let me just jump in there for a minute, David, because I think that's a really important point, because a lot of these that are bringing up that issue, and by the way, I have been very clear, there's no one that is condoning that behavior. In fact, most evangelicals, like myself, were not supporting Donald Trump when there were other options available in the primary. It was only when it came down to a choice between Hillary Clinton, who embraced policies that were antithetical to Christian beliefs, juxtaposed to a candidate in Donald Trump who actually had embraced those policies, which were more in line with biblical principles. But that said, we see that people are now saying, conservatives, Christians, evangelicals were appalled at Bill Clinton. And they made, in fact, I saw one make comment about the Southern Baptist releasing a statement about public morality back during Clinton's administration. But they failed to mention one specific thing, and you brought this up in your comment. I want to just expound upon it for a moment. And that is Bill Clinton had been engaged in this activity in the White House. If we remember, for those that remember Monica Lewinsky, that was activity that occurred while he was president in the Oval Office. As you said, Donald Trump, and this is what I have reiterated time and time again, that evangelical support of Donald Trump is conditional upon A, him keeping his promises, and B, that he walks the straight and narrow from the point that we supported him forward. And to our knowledge, and to all, even the media, if they knew something, I'm sure they would say it. That's what he's done since he's been president.
Yeah, none of us are arguing that Donald Trump's a paragon of moral virtue. Not saying that, but we are grateful that since he was sworn in as president, from all appearances, it's him and the First Lady and their family have provided a good example for what it looks like to be a family. So we're grateful for that.
Now, one of the things that I saw someone recently say, one of these kind of never Trumper individuals, that evangelicals are reacting out of fear and not faith. Talk to that.
I think I've seen articles that have made that argument as well, Tony. And I think you're right. These commentators are arguing that evangelicals are compromising morally by expressing support for the current administration. I think I even heard one evangelical say that support for the administration is degrading the church's witness. And it's the argument, I think explicitly the argument they made was that evangelicals are seeking secular salvation. Now, my response to that is simply that's not true for the evangelical leaders, the pastors, the faithful Christians that I know. They're not seeking a secular salvation. You know, the message of the gospel has not changed. The message of the gospel is that sinful people can be reconciled to a holy and righteous God through repentance and faith in Jesus Christ. That's the gospel. No one I know is arguing figuratively or literally for this kind of political salvation.
Well, what those that are advancing that particular argument are only facilitating those who think the social gospel will save us.
No, exactly.
On the other side. What we see in the policies that we have seen from this president and the judges in particular that he's appointed to the Supreme Court, what we actually see and what we desire as evangelicals in this country, as we want to pray and we want to put feet to our prayer so that we can live peaceably in this country. But the policies that we see enacted by our government, whether it be a state government, local government, or the federal government, in many ways cast the die for the environment in which we will have the right to practice our faith or not have the right to practice our faith. And that's not just the freedom of worship. We want to have laws that allow us to freely live out our faith so that we can share our faith and evangelize. And this is what really, really gets me, David, by some of these other individuals who say, well, the church prospers under persecution. The church generally has faced persecution when it's advancing. In the early days of the church, the reason there was persecution is because it was changing the culture, not when it was in retreat. And if we're stepping back in retreat, the persecution is coming because we are not being true to the gospel of going forth, making disciples, and literally changing the world for the good for everyone.
Oh, absolutely. And just going back to the point you're making, this isn't an issue of fear versus faith. I think that's just a false dichotomy. It's an issue between making wise and informed decisions versus making foolish decisions. And in the context of elections, in the context of campaigns, the party platforms also have to be a part of this conversation. And when you look, and I know our listeners are aware that every 4 years, both the Republicans and the Democrats get together at their convention, they put together a platform that essentially sets forth, that articulates their governing philosophy, and here's what we're going to do if you elect us. And if you look at the most recent platforms from 2016, in my view, there's a stark difference between where the major parties stand on the clear moral issues. And Tony, I wish that wasn't the case. I wish both political parties believed in the sanctity of life. I wish both parties opposed late term or what we've been calling birthday abortions. I wish both parties didn't want to impose an agenda of unrestricted LGBT rights on the entire country. but one of them does. And as we're getting ready to approach the 2020 election, which is already upon us, these are things that we need to carefully think through. And I've heard you say this before. This is what Christians, it requires us to use discernment, to prayer, digging into the issues. And these are the things that we need to be doing as we approach the election.
Yeah. And that's a good place for me to say this. I've never been a big party person. Now, I see the parties as vehicles to carry a message. And we live in a society in which you basically have a two-party system. I know you've had third-party attempts to run for president, and they never work, because we're essentially set as a two-party system of government. And as Christians, I think we should seek to influence those parties. Now, we have seen in the last three decades, it's been happening for a while, but it has come to a place where there is such a sharp contrast between the two that it is, there's no question as to where the parties stand. I think we should, our allegiance is not to a party, but if we can use that party to advance constitutional principles, biblical principles, then we should. And I think that's the influence that many have had with the Republican Party. And as you point out, those platforms, they matter, because 75% of the time, history shows the Democrats stick to their party platform, and almost 80% of the time, the Republicans stick to theirs. So these things matter.
Oh, absolutely. And just on that point again about the platforms, you had Democrats tripping over themselves in South Carolina at the Planned Parenthood Forum, every single one of them pledging their support to Planned Parenthood and overturning the Hyde Amendment, which is something Barack Obama didn't even do when he ran for re-election in 2012.
It is a new Democratic Party. David, we're going to have to leave it there. We're out of time. Thanks so much for joining us, and welcome again to the Family Research Council. Glad to have you on board.
Thank you, Tony.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. You can find our new publication, Biblical Principles for Political Engagement, when you visit tonyperkins.com. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit tonyperkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.